Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to the Dudes on Hockey podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Well, dude, pretty damn good start to the season, I gotta say.
That's what we said last year.
Dude, are you going to start like that already?
No.
Are you not even going to enjoy the moment?
No, I am very much enjoying the moment. I got to be honest.
Oh, poo. I'm going to sit in the corner. I think I got another thistle poo.
Oh, bird. The Sharks are going to lose next week, bird. Dude, who predicted a loss to the Rangers? Was it me?
I did.
I predicted
a loss to the Rangers. Well, what were you sitting on your high stool? Did you predict four goals by Thomas Hertl?
Who did? Nobody.
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 This is dream. I live dream. This dream. Thomas, what do you think about scoring all these goals? What do you think? I have no car. No card, girlfriend. I take pictures, no shirt.
Did I mention dream?
This is dream.
It is dream here.
Me take pictures, no shirt. You see my nipples.
Not real dream.
Have you seen those pictures, dude?
Yeah.
Him, the Yager
pictures. Pose?
I love that Burrish was the one that put them on Twitter, and now they're everywhere.
That's so good. Adam Burrish.
Redemption.
He's still contributing to the Sharks.
He is.
Don't say otherwise. The dude is still contributing.
Pretty great start to the season, you got to say. I mean, you know, all three games at home and three wins, and all of them... very decisive. I mean, these games were not close.
Nope.
And the last one was actually uncomfortable to watch, at least on TV. I don't know how you felt in person, but I actually felt kind of bad after a while. Like, it was just so bad. Like, the Rangers were they just never seemed to really have it together. And I don't know how much you can chalk up to the Rick Nash injury and the Stewart hit, which we'll get to a little bit later, but I guess we'll start with the Ranger game. Woo, oh boy.
You're right. How much of this is a conversation I had with my friend as we were walking out of the game. How much of this game was a Sharks domination performance or a Rangers just massive suckitude? Where was this?
I'm going to put it more on Sharks domination. I think they were all over them, and we've seen this before from the Sharks where they jump out early and then they just sort of go, eh.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years ago they would have just been like,
3-1. Okay. We're good.
No. This team, I mean, they didn't take their foot off the gas at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they haven't done that in either of the first three games, is really encouraging,
right?
That they haven't backed off. They didn't turtle. You would have certainly expected to see that, especially in that Vancouver game where I expected, they were going to back off and Vancouver's going to be in it again like that. Didn't happen.
Nope. No, it didn't. And I think it was a little bit more Rangers sucking because I did not expect the level at which the Rangers did not compete with the Sharks. The Sharks were just... absolutely, they weren't necessarily dominating at the very beginning of the game, and then the Sharks took those two really dumb penalties. You know, one being the Stewart hit, which was in the offensive zone. There's no reason to make that hit. He got his elbow up high. I was all the way on the other side of the rink. You could see it clear as day. It's an obvious penalty. And then there was another penalty to make it almost 2 minute 5-on-3 because it was too many men on the ice. The guy jumps onto the ice and then jumps back off really quick. And yeah, they gave up a 5-on-3 goal, which is not that surprising. And yet the Sharks completely bounded back immediately, tied the game on a shorty, and then they were off and running. And that was impressive because I thought there was every reason to go, oh geez, you know, look at what we did, how stupid we were in the last 5 minutes, and to sort of wallow in it for a minute. But they didn't. They just jumped right back in, and then they just started pounding them.
Rangers are in a tough spot in terms of their opening schedule. I think their first 9 games on the road, right? Because of the renovations to Madison Square Garden. And I think they've even been out here even longer with the exhibition games in Vegas. I don't know if they went back, but to be on the road really for 2-3 weeks at the beginning of the year, that could be team bonding. But, you know, I think that's got to be rough. And we caught them at the right time. And sure, some of it was Rangers' suckitude, for sure. But I think more of it was the Sharks just firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And
they certainly didn't give the Rangers any opportunity to get up off the canvas. That's for sure.
There was never a moment where you thought that they were going to come back at any point.
Right. That's true.
It was over. And the most encouraging thing to me was, like I said, that they didn't back off. And they I wanted 10. I was chanting at home. 10. 10.
We want 10.
Kill him. Kill him. He's a witch. Burner. The Phoenix game and the Vancouver game, not quite as dominant in terms of the final score, but impressive performances, dude, in both.
Yeah, Phoenix is one of those teams that can just grind it out of you, and I thought the Sharks really dominated that game pretty much from the jump. And there's and I guess now Phoenix is in some sort of shambles. They got just punked 6-1 from, I can't remember.
Islanders.
The Islanders, that's right. And then they had a players-only meeting, and they sent a bunch of guys down, and they brought up Brandon Yip. And if your solution is to bring up Brandon Yip, then you got some problems already. And Tim Kennedy, by the way. Kennedy is now playing.
Whoa,
for the Phoenix
Tim Kennedy.
So it's going to be Phoenix. You expected them to make the playoffs. I think you called them to make the playoffs, and they look like they haven't found their personality yet.
Well, I don't know what they're searching for. I mean, they have a personality. It's been there. I mean, did they give Tippett? Is this going to be the LaViolette syndrome? You know, that team's in big trouble. They will be exposed in a big way if they get rid of Tippett, because that team's not talented enough to win outside of that system. I'm not counting out Phoenix at all. I think that they'll figure it out. I mean, they're about good defense and goaltending, and we caught 51 shots on them.
Yeah.
I mean, that is not Phoenix hockey.
Not at all.
You should probably be getting 20-something shots on them.
Right.
If they're playing the way they should play. So I would expect that they're going to figure it out. Vancouver has played well ever since leaving the Shark Tank, but in that game, it looked like everything I expected it would.
Yeah.
They had no offensive identity. We didn't notice the Sedins at all.
Not at all.
And Luongo kept them in the game as long as he could. He actually played pretty well.
He played great. He played great, especially in the first period. He played really great. The Sharks could have been up by 4 easily in the first, and Luongo kept them in it on a couple of really dazzling saves.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow night when we go to Vancouver and what that game's going to be like in terms of, you know, now that they've settled down a little bit, they played Calgary, they played Edmonton, and they got a couple wins under their belt. The Sedins are scoring and happy and, you know, bathing and Lutfisk. You know, we'll see what it looks like, but well, what's been the key so far? Why are we doing so well? What do you see besides Tomáš Hertl?
Well, that's what we should talk about. There's 2 things we need to talk about. One is Tomáš Hertl, obviously. And then we've got to talk about the Brad Stewart hit. So which one do you want to touch first?
I want to talk about Jason Demers.
Okay. You mean the guy who's leading the NHL in plus minus?
I know. Plus 6. 3 assists.
Yeah.
No, we don't need to talk about him right now. We'll talk about Tomáš Hertl. Well, let's start with the obvious, right?
I think he's good.
Yeah. The goal was redonkulous. I mean, totally incredible. And I think the backlash that's come out today from some of the old time hockey guys is so stupid.
Yeah.
It's dumb. You know, he's a hot dog. I love that every time this kid scores, he looks so genuinely happy.
Yeah.
I mean, like it's different than, you know, Puig on the Dodgers, who like hits a home run and stands there and poses like a punk and flips his bat and like stares in the dugout like some sort of pompous jackass.
Right.
Like Hurdle's just like, I did it again. Hello, dream.
Like a dream.
Dream. You know what I mean? Like he's so happy to be here and to be playing in the NHL. I just think it's different. I don't look at that as hot dogging.
Right.
Do you?
No, I don't. And you, I think you want that kind of enthusiasm. I remember there was a mini controversy a few years back about Linus Omark and the way he took a shootout thing. He like started, he like took the puck skating backwards at first and like spun around and shot. And I think he scored and he had kind of a big celebration after that happened. And, you know, it's not the same as like pointing your stick at the goalie like a gun and like going like boom, boom, boom. You know, it's like there was a controversy about that as well with other players. I mean, you're right. This is just, it seems like it's purely an expression of joy at this point. And if you're a 28-year-old guy and you're making billions of dollars and you've been in the league 10 years and you pull that, then you might have a case to say, dude, act as if you've been here before, you know, which is a common refrain that people say. But this kid hasn't been here before. He's 19 years old. He's like, he's been in the NHL for all of 3 games. He's having the time of his life. It's like dream. So, yeah, I'm not, I don't have a problem with it. And I wouldn't have a problem with it if we saw the same thing out of another one of these great young players that are in the league.
It's entertainment. I mean, this is entertainment. I mean, I was hearing them argue about it on Hockey Central today, and I'm thinking to myself, you know what? Well, okay, if you're playing basketball and you have a breakaway, should you not dunk it? Because you might hurt somebody's feelings?
Yeah.
I will not dunk it. I'm just going to lay it up gently and walk away, you know? After you score a touchdown, you just put the ball down? You don't spike it? You can't celebrate? I mean, it's just stupid. Right. I mean, like, just even the whole argument I thought was so dumb. But we both were concerned, and you texted me afterwards saying, in the fourth goal, saying, should Hurdle play another shift?
Right.
And I said,
no.
And did he?
No.
He didn't.
He didn't play
absolutely
again.
Absolutely not. And McClellan, that made the right move there because, you know, the Rangers were probably embarrassed.
Oh, I'm sure.
And we weren't sure how they might react. The game was way over.
It was way out of hand at that point.
So all it takes is one Yahoo mm-hmm. to go out there and decide he's going to be the one who's going to make a point. And then your new young star is at O'Connor Hospital.
Right. He's down for the count. So
right.
That was the right call. I understand that that was for safety. If it was the fourth goal and it was 4-3, then you keep putting him out
absolutely.
There.
But it was the right way to play the situation. What do you like about him? I mean, what do you see that makes him special so far? And it makes you believe this isn't a flash in the pan.
Well, nothing's going to make me believe it's not a flash in the pan until it's not. Because the list is so long of players that come into the league. They're excited. They're young. They're energetic. They play great for 10 games, 15 games. And then the grind of the season catches up. You know, teams start zeroing in on those players that are good. Teams start, you know, you're ramming into 225-pound men every night. That's, you know, that's how it happens, and you just get beaten down over time, and your enthusiasm wanes a little bit, and the next thing you know, you've gone 8-10 games without a point, and your power play time's dwindling a little bit, and that's a perfectly normal thing. It's happened lots of times. Patrick Laliem, right? Patrick Laliem.
Andrew Raycroft.
Right.
All we can think of is goalies, right?
That's true.
I mean, there's so many players that have come on and played well, not just at the beginning of the year, but in the middle of the year. They come up from the AHL and they play well, and then they disappear off the face of the earth.
Right. So, but what he does have is, for one, he seems to have good size. He certainly seems to have a good awareness and a ability to both give out and receive contact, you know, with big guys, because he's played in adult leagues before. He's not just playing in junior hockey with a lot of guys that maybe aren't as sizable as he is. And he seems extraordinarily confident for a guy of his,
sure.
his age.
Yeah, for 19.
Which is amazing. Usually you see, I mean, look at Matt Nieto. Matt Nieto's been playing well. Like, he's been playing
way
above. Yeah,
very quietly had a three-point night last night right. that no one's talking about.
And he's playing way above what I would have expected from Matt Nieto. But you see Matt Nieto make plays out on the ice that you make when you're nervous, unsure of yourself, just came up from the college game and trying to make a way for yourself. Matt Nieto plays sometimes like he's trying not to make a mistake.
Right.
Thomas Hurdle does not play like that. He plays like he's trying to win, and he plays like he's trying to score. He doesn't play like he's trying to avoid mistakes.
There's just something about him, dude. And I don't want to get ahead of myself, but there's just something about him that makes you feel like that he could maybe not just be good, but like he could be like really good. Mm-hmm. Like, and he's just kind of got that feeling as a player, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's that confidence and his personality, and you just can't help but wonder, like, what is the future going to be for this guy? And gosh, you hope it's going to be as bright as it is now. Now, can he keep up this pace? Of course not.
No,
of course not. And I thought it was so ridiculous last night. Mark Ibanez, who's a local sportscaster, tweeted something about how Hurdle could be the next Sidney Crosby. I hope he was being ironic because, yeah. I mean, let's calm down.
Yeah, let's take a seat here.
Let's calm down. But he does look like he could be a very special player. And playing him with Joe and with Burns, I mean,
yeah,
it's electric.
Yeah,
and
it is.
You look at how the team is operating now with that combination and how good those top three lines are, even not at full strength.
Yeah.
It's dangerous. I mean, the Sharks look dangerous, like more dangerous than they've looked in a long time.
Right. And, you know, one thing that's pretty impressive, I mean, there's so many players on the Sharks that look impressive right now. Joe Pavelski looks extremely impressive with a third line that we, at least before the season started, thought would not be a very effective line. But he's centering one guy who we've given a lot of crap, who is playing really well, and that's Tommy Wingles. I think Tommy Wingles is playing extremely well.
Yeah.
He's shooting the puck. He's creating scoring chances for himself. Obviously, he's, you know, benefiting from playing with Joe Pavelski. I mean, he is really playing well. I got to hand it to Tommy Wingles.
Now, let's talk about Jason Demers. I mean, we kind of started in on that.
He finally figured out, hey, maybe an NHL roster spot isn't a given for me.
He's playing very well.
He's playing well.
You know, obviously the leading the NHL in plus minus, plus six, three assists, confident, not making those trademark Demers bloopers.
Yeah, that we saw so many times last season.
The sniper got him in the Blackhawks game from a couple of years ago. Yeah, I mean, he seems like a different guy out there. And the depth of the Sharks is going to be on display again because, you know, we didn't have Stewart for the first two games. He comes back and plays against the Rangers and promptly in his first, you know, shift,
right,
goes out and elbows
Rick Nash in the head
and is now going to be out for three games, dude. But Scott Hannon, I mean, that's why he's here, right?
He's serviceable.
He's here. He's here to play those 40, 45 games when he's needed. And he's always going to be ready. So now you put Hannon in for those three games. I don't think they're going to miss a huge amount, right?
No, and I still like the way Hannon plays. Maybe he's not as effective as he once was, and I get that. But the fact is he still, even though he's widely seen, and rightly so, as a very defensive defenseman, he's a guy that doesn't score a lot of points, you still see him trying to chip in on offense. You see a rush up the ice. He's rushing too. He's not just coasting through the neutral zone, pulling up at the offensive blue line, waiting for something to happen, sealing the boards, all those kinds of things that you would normally expect from, you know, a Brooks Orr pick, a Rob Scuderi, Robin Regier, these kinds of guys. He rushes up. He tries to be that trailing guy. You see these forwards, they do the delay play at the boards, and there's Scott Hannon rushing up the ice. They give it to Scott Hannon. He takes a slap shot. He misses 6 feet wide, but at least he shoots, dude. At least he's trying. And I really do respect that. He's not just saying, okay, I know what I'm good at is defense, and that's all I'm going to do. He's actually really trying to drive the play.
I'm
going to
be Debbie Downer for just a moment.
Okay, who's the downer?
Oh, no one's a downer.
Okay.
I'm going to say the Sharks last year started 7-0. Dude, why is it going to be different? Why? How are the Sharks not going to go in the toilet in a week like last year? Tell me why.
I'm going to be trying to convince you as much as I'm going to be trying to convince myself on this, because frankly, I don't know. But I think the difference is that last year we were in a situation where we're coming out of the lockout. Teams had very short time to prepare. And I think the way Jamie Baker explained it early on after the Sharks sort of slumped after the big gangbusters start is the Sharks took advantage of teams that weren't prepared to play. Okay. And you can't make that case now. Every team has had a full training camp. Every team's had a full summer to get ready, to train, to get into shape. You know, most, you know, rosters weren't that fluid, you know, for the teams that the Sharks have played so far. I mean, these teams were as prepared as the Sharks were, and the Sharks dominated these teams. You know, the Coyotes are the same team. They're not any different. I mean, the Rangers have a new coach, so that's different. I get it. But they still have mostly the same personnel, and we just kicked the crap out of them.
Yeah.
And so I think it's different in that there isn't this supposed, you know, advantage of the Sharks were prepared and the other teams weren't, because all the teams were sort of in the same boat. So I think that's why it's different.
I'm going to tell you more reasons why it's different, dude. The Sharks' problem last year was even strength scoring.
Yeah.
They were the worst, right?
Yeah.
Or second worst.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
And they are, after three games, which I know is a ridiculously low sample size, they're the best.
Mm-hmm.
They're the best in the NHL at scoring even strength goals, which was a real problem for them. I think if we were to go back and look at those games where they came back after the lockout, we would probably see, and I don't have it in front of us, Matt D'Agostini.
Yeah.
That they probably scored a lot of those goals on power plays, if I remember correctly. And they were all coming from like three guys, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like Marlowe,
right.
And Stars Couture. These guys were the ones carrying everybody. And now it's definitely a little bit more spread out. The power play numbers are skewed, obviously, right now with teams, some of them operating like a 70% clip or something just ridiculous like that. I mean, the Sharks, I think, are at about 27%, which if you look at, you know, they're at 26.7%. And last year, Washington was tops in the NHL with 26.8%.
Right.
So that's actually really damn good. 26.7%
over the course of the season
is really good. So, I mean, their power play's good. They're PKing at 85%, which is, you know, top third. And they've got all the facets of the game working right now, and the goalie's playing well.
Really well.
And I think when the dust settles, I mean, they may have just spanked three playoff teams. I mean, they might have. I mean, mm-hmm. We're talking about they last year they beat Edmonton and they beat Calgary at the beginning and they beat Colorado. Like they were kind of running over Phoenix, like teams that didn't make the playoffs. I think five of the seven wins came against non-playoff teams.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, when the dust settles, I think that Vancouver, Phoenix, and New York could, two of the three,
yep,
will probably be in there.
Mm-hmm.
So, not bad. Yeah, that's
not,
why it's
not
different.
Not bad. Not
bad. That's why it's different. How'd I do? Did I talk you into it?
I think you did.
Yeah!
I'm feeling better.
Woo!
Before we missed it a minute ago, but Eric had a question. We've come to the first critical moment of the Sharks season. What should Tomáš Hertl's nickname be? Certainly, he says the Big Hurt, a la Frank Thomas. I thought of that too. Maverick writing checks his body can't cash. CZECHS. He's struggling, obviously, but the kid needs a nickname and fast. Dude, does the kid need a nickname and fast? And two, what do you think of Teenage Mutant Ninja Hurdle? Because I personally hate that.
It's too long,
and it's reaching. Does it have to be like a rhyming thing? I mean, does it really have to be that? A hurdle, turtle, you know? I don't think the kid needs a nickname. How about, Tom, Tommy, Tomboy?
How about the Dream Machine?
Domo.
Dream Machine.
Like Dream. We could call him Like Dream. Like they called Ilya Bryzgalov the universe after he made that crazy speech on 24/7.
I don't know. I wish I had some sort of witty nicknames to throw out right now. I was just kind of got the, I don't even know. I'd be forcing it, dude.
Yeah.
That's by next podcast, we're going to throw out some nicknames.
Okay.
We need something like hamburgers, right? We need something we can call him.
Well, let's
on
wait
the podcast.
I think we might get some rich targets because, you know, he doesn't speak English very well. He's obviously going to get interviewed a lot more. So there could be some awesome hamburgers moments coming, you know. What's your favorite food? Hamburgers.
We've already had them. I mean, those interviews after the last two games where he was the number one star, where he's standing there with Brody Brazil.
Yeah.
And the first one's like, now, Thomas, I know that you don't speak very good English. And his eyes are like as wide as the pucks, right?
He's
like,
dinner plate.
He had no idea what Brody was saying.
You could have asked him about his dentist. He didn't have no idea.
I see game. It happened fast.
Yeah. Like no car. no car.
You just got to love it. Yeah. I mean, it's so good.
Oh, man.
Are there any questions? We've got some tweets. I know we have
a lot of people tweeted at us.
Some new listeners. We got a new listener named Charles Marlowe, which I like that.
I was all excited. I'm like, Patty Marlowe's brother's listening to... No. Just some... chump.
No, dude.
Just kidding.
You call a new listener.
I'm just
now
kidding.
He's never going to listen again.
No, now he's going to listen because we called him out.
Damn it, dude. You take that back.
We got good natured ribbing.
You take it back.
He's like a dude.
Take it back.
I'm not going to. It's funny.
Okay.
Okay. We, you know, it's like we kid because we love, sort of.
Is that Hurdle's nickname? The chump? The Czechoslovakian chump. The chump.
Hey. Yeah, well, we got a lot of people are subscribing to the Twitter feed. I think we got some new listeners, people excited about the new season. I hope we get some more. You know, it's good times to be a Sharks fan right now. What can you say? It's been good times a lot of the last, almost since this podcast began. It's been pretty good times. So what can you?
Hey, yeah, yes, we've always had a good run, dude. And you know, there's, you know, a lot of people talking some big talk after three games, and I certainly had several people stop me today and go, this is it. This is the year. And I said, let's...
That's what we said last year.
Calm down.
And
let's
the year
let's
before
calm down.
That.
I want to believe, and everything that we've seen is so encouraging. If they can keep playing like this and then add Havlat and Rafi Torres back to the mix, which, you know, we'll talk about Havlat for a second. The radio silence on that is so bizarre. Like, I find that to be strange. I mean, there's been two things that I've heard. One is that when he's ready, he'll play. The other is they have no intention of playing him, period, this year. Not even a shot that he'd get out there.
But he's not on long-term IR.
No, he's not.
So what's the deal here?
I don't know. If they did that, then they must be thinking he's gonna play soon, right? Why wouldn't you do that?
You can't put a guy on LTIR who isn't hurt, right? So there's that. You can't just suddenly designate a guy's hurt.
Sure, dude. People, I mean, they do that all the time.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, if he's honestly healthy or close to it, you can't do that because for one, I mean, there's the cap implications. You know, you can't just suddenly say, "Hey, you fall down." And
so
be
you
hurt.
Telling me that a healthy Martin Havlat, that if he's healthy enough to play, they would just hold him out of the lineup and eat the cap hit?
I think it's possible.
No. No.
Dude, they like banished him to the laundry room last year.
But
in the playoffs.
He had linguine attaching his pelvic bones together, dude.
I know.
Like, I mean, I think we know now he had a very serious injury. So
I completely understand that.
Every time Doug Wilson's like on KMBR, he always talks about how great the Torres, Havlat, Pavelski line was. I just don't think that they would let a guy who has that much talent just hang around the building and collect $5.5 million.
Well, you can't send him down because he still gets paid.
Right.
So this is me putting on my conspiracy tinfoil hat. Okay. So indulge me for a minute. Say there's something going on other than an injury thing, right? Which is somewhat indicated by the fact that they moved him out of the locker room during the playoffs last year. There's some sort of personality conflict between Martin Havlat and the coaching staff, or Martin Havlat and Doug Wilson, or Martin Havlat and the other players. I have no idea, okay? Say that could happen. So what do they do? He has an injury. Maybe it's a legitimate injury, but now he's healthy or close to it. And they're like, yeah, we're just going to sort of keep this whole plan thing on the down low. You know, we're not going to really talk too much about the fact that you're okay to play at this point. We're just going to sort of keep you out. We're not really going to say that you're really hurt, but we're not really going to say that you're healthy either. And we're just going to try and keep this quiet, because if they didn't want to play him, then obviously that would be a huge distraction. Everybody would be answering questions all day and all night about what's the matter with Martin Havlat and all this kind of stuff. And that's a conspiracy theory.
But this player is here for 2 more years.
I know.
I mean, can they buy him out next summer, or is that over?
I believe they can buy him out next summer.
Oh, man. So you think that it's possible, and this is what I had read, that they are intentionally not playing him so that he will be healthy in the summer so they can buy him out.
I'm not saying I have any evidence that supports that conclusion. I'm just saying it might be possible if you read the tea leaves in a very specific way.
I want to know too. Let's call Kevin Kurz.
Yeah.
Call Mark Purdy. Let's get EJ Raddick on the phone. I want to know.
Yeah. Full court press on Kevin Kurz, because I think, I'm not saying he's not, you know, doing his job or anything like that, but it's odd that people aren't pursuing this avenue of inquiry a little bit. Like, why do we not know?
Those guys know. They know. They're not. Don't you think they know?
Wow. You think they know and they're saying they're not saying?
I don't know.
I think that's even worse.
Do you know? Do I know?
Does anybody really know?
Well, he was so vocal about it during the playoffs, and now all of a sudden it's just gone away. I find it odd.
Like, this whole situation of circumstances is just very, very strange. It's just very strange. And I'd like to think that there's one singular unified explanation or unified theory that explains everything, but maybe it's just not. Maybe it's just a bunch of weird circumstances.
You know who we need to get on the podcast?
Who?
You know who'll tell us straight?
Who?
Mark Purdy.
Okay.
We're going to do it.
Okay, we'll get him.
All right, we're going to try and get Mark Purdy for next week, because if you've listened in the past, Mark Purdy is a straight shooter, baby. Yeah.
And even if he doesn't know, he'll have a good idea. he's happy to talk out of his ass the way we do. I wouldn't say he talks out of his ass, because he actually knows what he's talking about, whereas we don't. But
yeah.
But he will certainly have a theory. Let's put it that way.
We're going to try and do it.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
We'll see what we can do.
Good podcast, dude.
Dude, other NHL news? Anything else happening in the NHL that you wish to discuss?
What the frickety frack with the Calgary Flames, dude? They haven't lost a game.
I know. What?
What the hell?
It's
inevitable. The team that we don't draft in our season draft always makes the playoffs. It always happens.
Dude, no.
Dude.
Dude, no.
Yes.
Dude, last year was Florida. They didn't make the playoffs. Dude, it's good. I mean, have you seen that roster? I was like watching highlights.
I know,
tonight.
Dude.
Joey
McDonald
standing
on
his
head.
They
beat the Canadians tonight.
I know. Well, yeah.
What?
I know. I don't understand it either. But any team can get hot for a few games. They're playing with house money up there in Calgary. Everybody picked them to suck. They have no pressure on them whatsoever. They got a bunch of young kids running around up there. They're going to do great for 7 games, and they're suddenly going to realize they're the Calgary Flames, and they're going to lose 15 in a row.
Okay. 2 more things.
Love you, Lett.
How
dumb are the Flyers on a scale of 1 to 10? One being smart, 10 being really dumb.
Yeah, I'm going to give them a 9.5 because I think the thing that makes it dumb is that by their own admission, they saw this coming and they were kind of letting it go because of the lockout shortened season that they didn't really have it together. But in the preseason, they were terrible. They were like 1-8-1.
Who cares? It's the preseason.
No, I know, but can't you kind of see? I mean, Holmgren was saying it was the worst training camp he'd ever seen. How do you even let it get that far? Like, how do you let it get that far? And it's not like LaViolette's a bad coach.
You can't fire the coach in training camp. That's even dumber than firing him 3 games in.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know,
listen, you give the guy 10, you give the guy at least 15 or 20 games, or you give him none. If you don't think LaViolette's up to the job, then you fire him in the summer and replace him with a coach that puts in his own system so they can start the season knowing what they're doing. At this point, they sucked in the preseason. They sucked at the beginning of the season, and now they don't have a chance to turn this thing around. They're going to win a couple games under Berube, because that's what always happens when you bring in a new coach, and then they're going to be back to being completely.
How do you know Berube can't fix it? How do you know that?
I mean, I don't think he can fix it.
How do you know that?
For one, I don't think this team's very good.
They've got a decent roster.
They're going to get slightly better because they're a pretty good team, not great.
I'm not going to count them out. I'm not counting them out yet. I think that the worst thing about this team is their goaltending. I mean, it's terrible. Yeah. And their defense is not good, and their forwards are average. All right, they're not a very good team. Actually, you know what? Their forwards are pretty darn good.
Yeah, their forwards are good. Their forwards are good.
I'm not counting them out yet. You know.
They're going to regress towards the mean. They're going to get better, and then people are going to say it's Berube. Sure. It's on Berube, and it's really not. It's just the team figured it out a little bit, but they're not doing themselves any favors by firing LaViolette.
This smelled of Ron Wilson to me. I just thought for sure that that would be what would happen.
Yeah.
Here comes Ron Wilson to come in and just be a total hard ass.
I said it was going
to
be Keenan because that's the only dumbest thing I can think of.
All right, who is the next coach to go?
To go?
Who's on death watch right now for you?
Wow. Let me think. You know,
because we've seen this in the past where guys like Randy Carlyle and Bruce Boudreaux get fired, and then another coach gets fired really fast because you got to think LaViolette is instantly the top coach available, right?
Right.
So instantly.
Other teams could sort of see LaViolette out there and say, hey, he's better than what we got right now.
Right. I mean, how long was Boudreaux out of work? Days?
2-3 days.
Yeah. And then they made that change. And Carlisle wasn't out of work much longer.
Right.
So, I mean, those two coaches, good coaches, just not the right fits for their team anymore. LaViolette's still a good coach. Is there a team out there you go, maybe they're going to pull the trigger pretty fast?
Carolina's doing okay.
Yeah, and Carolina's not a team that you go, well, that's on Kevin Dineen, right?
Yeah.
Isn't it him? No, it's not. That's Kirk Muller.
Yeah.
That roster sucks. You know, I mean, that's not his fault.
No.
I'll tell you who I think is in trouble.
Oh, yeah?
Mike Yeo.
Oh, the Wild?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He was in trouble last year, too, reportedly.
And that team has started slow. They're 0-1-2. I think Mike Yeo should be looking for starving students movers because I don't think that ownership in Minnesota is going to wait too long.
Yeah, they don't have a lot of patience.
I mean, they just extended Pominville.
Mm-hmm.
They've got this young talent. They put the pressure on themselves to win now. You've got LaViolette, you know, at Sandals Resort or wherever he is. Having a Mai Tai, waiting for someone to call. I mean, that's the team that I look at and you go, yeah, that's a team that should make the playoffs. That under Yeo, maybe there's some question about whether that's the right guy anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. That seems like the current best candidate because they have a lot of pressure on them.
Let's end with this, dude. The George Parros faceplant.
Yeah.
Did that change your opinion on fighting?
Didn't change my opinion, but over the last maybe couple years, especially with a lot of the NHL stuff and especially with, you know, the untimely deaths of some, you know, NHL fighters like Bugard and some others, it certainly made me sort of recalculate what I think about fighting. At first, I thought I was like, oh, you know, it's a semi-entertaining part of the game. It's not why I go to hockey games. And I think people who say that a lot of people go to hockey games just to see the fights are really not very clued in as to what happens, especially in today's game where fights are really, really rare. They're very rare. If you're going to see fights, you're going to be disappointed most nights.
Hasn't been a single fight yet in a Sharks game.
Yeah, that's true. And I mean, who's going to drop? I don't know who. So
Pelech, he's back.
Oh, is he back?
He's back for tomorrow night's
McCarthy's
game.
Down?
Yeah, McCarthy's gone again. But I know why he's there. I mean, he's there to play against a Vancouver team that has Sestito and Weiss.
Yeah.
Two guys who are goonins who might decide to goon it up.
It didn't change my thinking on fighting, but I do think that especially the thing that really was surprising is how, you know, GMs like Steve Yzerman, guys who played in the league a long time, sort of came out and said, okay, it's time for this to be a game misconduct. To me, it always seemed like the NHL was sort of holding on to this idea that fighting still has a place in the game. And now when you have guys who played the game a long time and they're still involved in positions of power like Steve Yzerman and some other GMs, and they're calling for a game misconduct, to me, writing's on the wall now. We're going to see fighting either a game misconduct or completely banned and dealing with suspensions within the next 10 years.
But you hear so many other guys on the other side saying, and the players themselves saying, we don't want it gone. We don't want it gone.
The NFL players don't want the new, you know, hit with the crown of your helmet rule gone either. The NFL players all want that too. So, I mean, can you really trust these guys to act in their best interests at this point in their lives?
What do you mean? They all want advisors. No, they didn't. I know.
So I don't think it's their game and they're the ones playing it, but I think you have to listen to other people other than just the players, because the players are going to go for the status quo and they're certainly going to go for stuff that make them look tough.
I think that on Merrick versus Wyshynski this week, actually, they made a really good point about this, and they kind of beat the subject to death, actually, but they were making fun of Stevie Y mm-hmm. for coming out and saying that, you know, fighting shouldn't be there. And their point was, well, okay, Stevie Y, what would your career have been like without McCarty and Grimson?
Yeah, it's true.
Like, what would your night in and night out, what would your career have been like? You know, and that's a point. I mean, they're like, these guys protected you and allowed you to, you know, what would Gretzky have been like without McSorley? He still would have been great, but there would have been nights that someone might have done something, right?
I don't say that Stevie Y is saying that we should ban goons. I mean, if Stevie Y played in an era where if you got into a fight, you got an automatic game misconduct, he wouldn't have needed Stu Grimson. He wouldn't have needed Darren McCarty. He could have played his game. Same with Gretzky. Gretzky wouldn't have needed McSorley and Dave Semenko if he was playing in an era where you couldn't fight without getting kicked out of the game.
Wouldn't we still see situations like the John Scott Kessel situation where, you know, let's say John Scott lines up against Logan Couture and starts poking at him like a big angry polar bear,
right?
And Couture gets goaded into it. So then guys like that are just going to try and get rid of skill players.
I mean, you think Logan Couture would actually drop under those conditions?
No. I don't know.
Kessel sure didn't. Kessel just skated away. I think all this good...
Kessel went up to him and speared him.
Yeah, I know.
So it would have been mission accomplished. It was.
It wasn't a fight.
It wasn't a fight for Kessel. It was almost worse.
I was not happy with what Kessel did.
I totally hear what you're saying, and I mean, I enjoy the fighting aspect of the game.
So do I. I'll be honest.
It's an emotional part of the game that always gets the fans excited, and I think it does have an impact on something I know you're not a huge believer in, which is momentum, but it can impact the game, I think, and I'd hate to see it go, but I would understand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would understand.
Right.
If it was what, I mean, and you make a valid point, maybe the players don't know what's good for them, but if it's hard to say if it was the right thing to do, then it's always going to be just, you know, purely an opinion thing. I don't know. Let's have fighting if they want it. It's optional, right? You don't have to do it.
That's true.
Yeah. So, you know, fighting if you want it.
We're good.
Okay.
All right.
There you go.
Good talk. All right, dude. Fun podcast. It's fun because the Sharks are playing great. Look forward to some more games. We've got one in Vancouver. We're back here on Saturday night
against Ottawa.
Ottawa. Yeah. And then on Tuesday, I can't remember who we're playing next week. But you know, the Sharks they're not playing a bunch of cupcakes here. I mean, they're playing some good teams. I mean, you know, Ottawa's going to be a playoff team, I think. Vancouver's going to be a playoff team. And, you know, this isn't an easy schedule. Obviously, there's a lot of home games here. But still, the quality of teams is definitely very high. So I'm happy to see the Sharks playing so well, dude, and I know we're going to see this kind of stuff continue, and I want to see Tomáš Hertl score five goals next game.
Then six goals!
And then seven!
Six goals in 4 minutes!
Hate the show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.